really good IR professionals have the courage to hold the mirror up to the business and provide clear insight and counsel to the leadership team.
Welcome to Inquire, the Investor Relations podcast. In this podcast, we speak with senior IR professionals on their career experience to share knowledge and learnings around IR strategies. We also speak with portfolio managers and sell-side analysts to explore their view of investor relations and what constitutes best practice.
As a brief note, I'll be on maternity leave over the coming months, so episodes will be published at a slightly reduced frequency of around once a month during this period. And we look forward to returning to our normal bi-weekly schedule later in 2026.
In today's interview, I am delighted to be joined by Sarah Webster. With over 30 years consumer goods industry experience at Britvic, Diageo and GSK, working in roles spanning finance, sustainability, marketing, and including a decade working in investor relations. Sarah's most recent executive role was as Group Sustainability Director at Britvic PLC, responsible for embedding sustainability into the company's strategic growth algorithm, reporting and governance, and leading internal and external stakeholder engagement. Sarah is now a profit and not-for-profit board member, and today's conversation explores the intersection of sustainability and long-term financial reporting, including the interaction between sustainability and IR, and the interaction of both functions with company boards. Welcome to the Inquire podcast, Sarah, and thank you very much for joining me today.
You're welcome. It's lovely to be here.
So you've had a career spanning investor relations, sustainability, and now board roles. Drew you first into investor relations?
Well, I had completed what I refer to as my Diageo MBA. I'd been in finance roles, you know, FP&A, I'd done mergers and acquisitions, and then I'd done a few years in commercial and marketing roles, and I wanted to get back into finance. And the beauty of IR, it enabled me to combine all of these disciplines. And it gave me a real strategic oversight, enabling me to join the dots across the functions and the markets as I learned more about different parts of the business that I'd not worked in.
And you spent significant time in the drinks industry with both Diageo and then with Britvic. So what have been your defining lessons from that period?
Probably make it experiential, whether that's visiting a cooperage in Scotland, followed by a whiskey dinner, or recreating a great night out for analysts with amazing cocktails. Capital markets events are an amazing opportunity to showcase brands in your portfolio and, you know, in the drinks industry, in the case of, you know, celebrating the very best of hospitality. And then you switch that to healthcare or consumer health, you know, showing analysts how consumers' eyes track products on a supermarket shelf, or getting them to taste or sample Japanese Sensodyne in an R&D sensory booth, which is more frothy. And then it helps them understand the psychology and the role of froth, as it were, in hygiene or oral hygiene in Japan. It just brings things to life so much more. And then, gosh, many years ago, I set up sort of ESG engagement at Diageo. That's when we called it SRI, Sustainable Responsible Investment. And it's fair to say it was an add-on to my day job. I did it because I was interested in it. I can remember, you know, we hosted our first dedicated sustainability webinar. I had three members of the exec. And the Q&A was a little quiet. None of this, two questions, if I may, and a follow-up that we're used to on earnings call today. But, you know, for me, it was a really important stake to put in the ground that I felt was required. It was also a time when we moved from face-to-face results announcements to webcasts, which was a real change that took place in the industry. And I know analysts are really keen to see the whites of the eyes, but then that does free up a bit of time to have these fantastic capital markets events when you can learn so much more about the business. And as well as these set pieces, key learning from IR is, you know, agility. You've got to be exceptionally agile, respond to market shocks, M&A, management transitions. There's never a dull moment.
So you had a lot of fun with your capital markets events, much more so than my time in banking investor relations. What is it about investor relations that kept you there for over 10 years in total?
I think a lot of the storytelling, bringing financial performance to life through case studies and showcasing different categories or markets or business capabilities, whether that's your supply chain, marketing and R&D. I also really enjoyed building those long-term trusted relationships with analysts. So that was a key part of it for me. Also, I'm naturally inquisitive, so I like not knowing what's going on. Some people might call it nosy, but you know, IR is a great place for that. And without it sounding too cheesy, I've been incredibly proud of the brands and the businesses that I've worked with. And it's been a real privilege to be able to be an ambassador and to be able to showcase that.
Looking back, what do you say differentiates a good IR professional from a truly strategic one?
Having an exceptional network, both inside and outside the business, understanding what people's motivations are so that you can make sure that you're helping them, particularly in the case of an analyst, you know, where are the gaps in their understanding and in their valuation? You know, understanding the operating context. In IR, you see all geographies, all functions and the competitive landscape. Not many people in the business get that breadth. And really good IR professionals also have the courage to hold the mirror up to the business and provide clear insight and counsel to the leadership team. I think one thing that is important, and it comes back to that agility point as well, is understand the arc of the performance story over the strategic timeframe and investment cycles. So if we're going to say this today, how might that show up next year or in a year's time? So maintain that long view whilst also being agile. Be clear on your investment case, the investment thesis, and how is the business course correcting in response to those inevitable curveballs.
And where do you think investor relations is still underutilized in organizations today?
Investor relations can be the corporate ears and eyes and a great source of competitive insight. You get investor feedback as well, both positive and constructive challenge. And if someone within the business has a question, I urge them to ask your IR colleague. They may well know the answer, or they'll certainly know someone who does. And I think that is really underutilized. Great source of competitive insight from my perspective. And that's something that I enjoyed as well.
Actually, quite a nice segue into talking about IR's interaction with the board, because obviously now in your career, you're a board director and advisor. So drawing on your sustainability experience to help organisations connect sustainability with long-term financial resilience and strategy. So let's touch on first what prompted your move from investor relations into sustainability leadership at Britvic.
Well, as I mentioned before, I included sustainability in my IR thinking for over a decade before I moved to Britvic. However, I was getting a little frustrated with the short-termism proliferated by the short reporting cycles. You know, it can take 10 to 15 years to develop a drug. If you're doing brilliantly, then it might take less than that. So will things materially change between quarterly reporting cycles? And it also means that you're so busy reporting last quarter's results, you're limited in the time you have to showcase the business and the brands and the drivers of long-term growth. And that's the bit that I enjoy. It's the looking forward versus always looking backwards. I also felt that perhaps the right questions were not being asked. But on the flip side, sustainability lacked commerciality. And so at Britvic, it was my first opportunity to lead the sustainability agenda at a PLC. And put my money where my mouth was, building the business case for long-term commercial resilience and competitive advantage.
So how transferable would you say investor relations skills into sustainability roles are in practice? You've sort of touched on that already.
Yes, I think storytelling, creating a vision for the future and then driving the investment case for sustainability, bringing the successes to life, the lessons learned, the challenges, very, very similar to IR. Again, it's relationship building and stakeholder engagement, both inside and outside of the business. Because chief sustainability officers do not execute the strategy. It's the R&D team, it's the factory engineers, it's the procurement team that do that. And the other area, and this is particularly of interest to boards, is governance and reporting. There's an awful lot of sustainability reporting. And applying the same rigor to non-financial reporting as financial reporting through data governance and processes is increasingly important.
And in terms of investor demand for ESG, has that genuinely evolved, or do you think the narrative has just become more sophisticated?
Oh my goodness, yes, it has definitely evolved. You know, when I started talking about sustainability in the 2000s, I was only talking to specialist analysts, and the focus, you know, at Diageo at the time was on the responsible consumption of alcohol, a little bit on water, a little bit on energy. And these conversations were very few and far between. So even though almost a fifth of our investors had signed up to the UN Principles of Responsible Investment, those questions just weren't coming through in the dialogue. Roll on 10 years, and there are a lot more conversations, a lot more ESG analysts. However, many of the questions were still quite compliance-based. Too few even knew about our portfolio and which were the real issues that were material to our business. I think during COVID, we saw another step change. So there was a big step up with regard to the sort of, particularly the social and the human elements, as you would expect. So then we started to have, I think, much richer conversations focused on the material issues and the opportunities, more relevant and targeted conversations, and the frequently with portfolio managers and fund managers, as well as their ESG lead. So was the quality of the conversation the sign of ESG maturity, or was it because, you know, we hosted regular roadshows and the funds knew us better? I don't know. It's probably a bit of both, but certainly a massive evolution over the last 15 or so years.
And how closely did you work with the investor relations team to try and influence and drive the engagement with investors?
Really closely. I mean, it helped because I'd spent so long in investor relations previously. But yeah, we made sure that, you know, we had our annual ESG roadshow with, you know, some really big investors who knew the business incredibly well. And, you know, for results presentations as well, you know, there was always, you know, sustainability embedded within that. And you could see that in terms of the portfolio evolution as well at Britvic. So it really was part of the investment case for Britvic. And also when we took investors around our factories and things like that, I would go with them and talk about, you know, some of the initiatives that we were doing within our supply chain.
And did you find it easy to identify the relevant individuals within the institutions? Did you work with a specialist? Because it's often an area I know companies, IR teams struggle with, corporate brokers having the expertise around sort of identifying the right stakeholders for the sustainability engagement piece. So just interested in any learnings there.
Working with a partner like that is really informative, and it you know, they do a lot of the hard work and they have those connections. So for the large part, for our set pieces, for our roadshow, then for the stuff that happened during the year, that was just done on an ad hoc basis. As and when requests came in with IR, and if there was a capital markets event, then we'd work together on that.
Any thoughts on what you observe now, particularly in your advisory capacity, on what companies may be getting wrong still when it comes to sustainability communication with investors?
I think the conversations are still quite values-based on shoulds and doing the right thing. And it's very well-meaning. However, in many instances, it's not connected clearly enough to the core business and financial performance. So, for example, in soft drinks, you know, the health agenda is absolutely huge with high fat salt sugar legislation and ultra processed foods grabbing the headlines alongside GLP-1s and consumers seeking products that support their physical and mental health. So investors may wonder how the business is evolving its portfolio to meet this shifting landscape relative to the competition. You know, what access do we have to raw materials that are subject to increasingly volatile yields due to adverse weather? You know, water risk. There are so many elements, you know, packaging regulation. How does this impact how we get our products to consumers? So these are some of the richer conversations that we need to be having. Reaching net zero is important. But, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, we were all racing to have our net zero targets without necessarily knowing how we were going to get there. Actually, if we tackle each of those elements above, decarbonisation is a natural byproduct. That's the sort of thing and sort of conversations that you need to be bringing to life with your investors.
And just thinking, you've touched on it already, but this, the balance between financial and non-financial disclosure within a company's equity story messaging, any final sort of thoughts on how IR teams should be approaching that balance?
Yeah, I think they're inextricably linked, and the new reporting regulations bring this into sharp focus. So if you look, you know, the foundation of UK SRS is financial materiality. And everything we've sort of already talked about is how do we convert non-financial metrics into financial metrics? So that might be cost of goods inflation. It might be investment or return on investment calculations. insurability, regulatory costs, you know, customer access and route to market. So those are the things that we need to be highlighting, because if an analyst can't put it in their model, then how can we expect them to put a value on it for the business and give businesses the right credit, as it were, or, you know, a discount if they're not doing the right thing?
I'm planning next, because I'm really interested in the influence investor relations teams can have with board members, but don't necessarily always take full advantage of. I'm actually sitting on the committee for the Investor Relations Society's conference this year, and it's one of the agenda themes and panel conversation topics that's going to be discussed at the conference later this summer. So I'm just interested in your perspectives from both sides. And starting with maybe what boards most often misunderstand about investor expectations, particularly when it comes to sustainability.
Yes, I'm not sure that the right conversations have been had historically. And I've had to tell portfolio managers when they're challenging me on the water strategy and saying it's not robust enough. I said, that's great. Thank you. Please also tell our CEO and our CFO and the chair, because they think you're only focused on margin recovery. And so I think it's making sure that those conversations are had and they are joined up. But I also appreciate there's only so much that can be discussed in an hour's conversation. You know, boards think, you know, and much of it, you know, a lot of investor focus has switched to leveraging AI and controls to combat cybersecurity and, of course, margins and profitability in this incredibly volatile geo-economic world that we're operating in. You know, sustainability risks and opportunities haven't gone away, but they are getting a little bit less airtime. However, I do think that's beginning to change. I've had an increasing number of conversations with audit and risk committees about reporting preparedness. Section 172 of the Companies Act has been in place for a number of years. And I think that, combined with provision 29 of the Corporate Governance Code, will focus the mind of both boards and investors. What are the material risks, both financial and non-financial? And what are the mitigating controls and processes? You know, and I think there's an awful lot of alignment too with UK SRS that comes into force this year.
I think that's an interesting point as well. It's worthwhile IR teams covering what proportion of a particular meeting is dealt with on certain topics, because I think it can be surprising when sustainability has been raised on a regular basis. And you touched on AI as well. I've got some clients where AI is now a third to 50% of the conversation in the meetings, and actually just providing some sort of steer around the focus of conversations can be helpful to the board in itself.
Yeah, I think so. And also just think about a lot of this, and this is the approach I took to TCFD. You know, use these tools as strategic tools, not compliance tools. That doesn't do anyone any favors. Actually use them as a tool to build a stronger strategy, because they're there to help investors make wiser decisions. They should also be there to help you as a business make wiser capital allocation decisions.
And more broadly, if you were advising an IR team today, what should they prioritize to build credibility and influence decisions at board level?
Be the external lens, the eyes and ears of the market, as I said before, on the competitive intelligence. I think long-term thinking versus short-term tactical thinking, ensuring that the equity story aligns across all channels of communication coming from the business, not just investor relations or the corporate affairs team, but also all those other connections that we have in the web of relationships that we have with our suppliers, our consumers, our customers. And importantly, as I've mentioned before, you know, support them in the evolving governance and reporting. This is really new territory for many boards. Liabilities for board members are increasing. Work together, build their understanding, show them your plan to address the new disclosures, including a dry run. And I think an honest appraisal of investor sentiment, what's good, what requires attention, what don't they understand within the equity story? And that requires you to be honest with them.
Really good tips there. So let's come on to talk about your role at the Eden Lab. So could you briefly outline the Eden Lab's mission and your role within it?
Eden Lab is sort of not about your back office carbon accounting or water services that many consultancies do really well. Its mission is all about supporting businesses identifying what the new growth looks like in this future that is going to be radically different to what we know today. It's fast approaching. In some instances, it's already here. And what does the new business model look like, leveraging that creativity, very commercial, and technology to create tomorrow's winning businesses, whether that's energy solutions, whether it's making, in our case, at Britvic, it's how do we look at making the drinks portfolio healthier and more sustainable, you know, using AI tools for predictive health modeling or sustainable travel solutions. I think what's interesting with Eden Lab and why I like supporting them is they don't just create a vision for the future. They convert that into commercial value and an investment case that you can take to your board together with clear next steps, because it's very easy to paint a utopian picture of where we need to get to. But if we don't know how we're going to get there, there's just a lot of talk and no action. So my involvement with them, you know, I don't get involved in the day-to-day execution, but I help them with where they can sort of focus, where they can make a difference. Particularly in a startup environment, the opportunities often seem infinite. So understanding where you can lead and add value without spreading yourself too thinly, I think is really key to success. I think my finance background means that I can talk through the finances with them. But importantly, I think how the work that Eden Lab does is complementary to a lot of the reporting requirements that businesses now need to face. So UK SRS, the board disclosures around provision 29, you know, Eden Lab will help businesses identify what some of those controls can be to address those material risks and the, importantly, opportunities facing those businesses today.
And can you talk about what you've learned through Eden Lab and how boards should be thinking differently about resilience today?
That's a great question. And I think it's a question of nuance. Many businesses list their financial risks, but don't necessarily understand the genesis of that risk, which could be a result of a sustainability challenge, and they're not connecting the dots. So input cost inflation is a great example. I think most food and drink businesses know this, but, you know, there's citrus greening disease, which is impacting the cost of orange juice. So, that, you know, if you compare a liter of orange juice now versus 3 or 4 years ago, it's huge. We've all heard about coffee and cocoa shortages, salad shortages due to drought in Spain. Then there's GLP-1s, ultra-processed food, packaging regulations, and, you know, any reputational damages as well due to human rights protocols not being what they need to be in your value chain. You know, these are all sustainability or resilience risks and opportunities in the broadest sense, and they all directly connect to financial risks and opportunities as well. And I think that's where, you know, we need to start joining the dots in a smarter way. And I think most sectors get it if they're truly honest with themselves, but the hard bit is how to change, which is the major stumbling block to action, and the financing that is required for those solutions, and how you move from your cash cows that perhaps are less sustainable to, you know, moving to a new model is incredibly nerve-wracking. And it does require courage, some risk-taking. But the risk is, if you don't make those changes, then your business may not be around in 10 years' time.
And just talk about sustainability at board level. How do you say sustainability conversations have differed in boardrooms and evolved over the last, say, 5 years?
Historically, you might be in front of the board once or twice a year. It would be quite high level. I was very lucky at Britvic, you know, in the last 18 months or so, you know, I was regularly on the agenda. We were doing a whole reset and embedding sustainability into the heart of, you know, the core business strategy. But you had to go through various stages for that. There was a lot of learning that we did collectively as a board, because you can't just go in there with the solution. You need to give them some of the foundations of that as well. So that was, and the regularity really helped with that. I think helping the board understand the competitive advantage that can be driven through doing things differently, and the competitive advantage that can be driven through becoming a more resilient business, is really important. So I think it has evolved. You know, I have been fortunate. I do know that those conversations aren't always happening, and it's very, very dependent on the composition of your board and your executive team as well. It does depend very much on the individuals and the culture of that boardroom and that executive team.
I sense a sort of recurring theme here about the importance of tying in sustainability, making it less sort of compliance policy driven and much more commercial, competitive, relevant to longer term strategic and financial decisions.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, as I said earlier, I think that the regulation is changing and, you know, sustainability or becoming a more resilient business, driving competitive advantage is a big transformation that needs to happen. The same way that boards are talking about AI, because that's the new thing at the moment. AI is a business transformation program. It is going to fundamentally change how we do business in the future. Sustainability and building that resilience muscle is exactly the same. It's another transformation program that needs to be embedded in the business.
Just going off the subject here, are you seeing AI tools really shaping and changing sustainability reporting?
I think it has the potential to. I think it all depends on data. You know, the foundation of reporting is data and data cleanliness, so it can help. But as we know, AI can hallucinate, and you've got to make sure that you have got good data and you've got that oversight. You still need people to understand the data that you're looking at to make sure, you know, are the outputs making sense, or be inquisitive and not just accept a figure for what it is. So it can certainly be a huge opportunity. Is it the be all and end all? No.
And any other considerations around how boards should approach trade-offs between short-term performance and long-term sustainability?
The board is supposed to be thinking long-term. That is the challenge that all boards face. But equally, when you're a listed entity, you also have multiple stakeholders, not just your investors, that you need to think about. And there is a lot of challenge for short-term performance. It's one of those things that continues to be a massive challenge. Some businesses are able to deal with it better than others. That's something that I still don't have an answer to be perfectly honest. I mean, we're dealing with long-term trends, but the businesses are managed on short-term reporting cycles. And any ideas you've got, Clara, on closing that loop, I really appreciate it, because I don't think we have the answers yet.
I think it's relevant as well to what is in focus for investors at a particular point in time. And you raised a very valid point at the beginning that there's a lot going on geopolitically, globally. There's a lot of companies, particularly UK listed companies, who are, you know, having challenges macroeconomically, which is impacting financial performance. And it's all going to be placed within the context. So what we've observed at Equatory is sustainability has become less in focus for institutional investors. And I think that's more because of the noise going on with the broader economy and geopolitically. But it doesn't mean it's not going to come back into focus or isn't still relevant. And it's kind of that fine balancing act for IR and sustainability and corporate reporting teams to address, and is to make sure it's still embedded as part of the sustainability strategy, as part of the strategic sort of narrative and the equity story messaging, but getting the right balance to kind of satisfy what investors will need to monitor and report on in the future with actually what investors are really currently very much focused and interested in.
You're spot on. And I think this is where UKSRS and Provision 29 will help and focus the mind. And one of the challenges with TCFD, whilst it was a brilliant tool to unlock for me personally, great tool to unlock, you know, engagement in sustainability across the whole business, it was still dealing with 2050 or things that are a long way off. And I think those designing the regulation and the reporting frameworks appreciate this and have recognized this. So I think now you're looking at something, you know, more alignment between sustainability reporting and financial reporting, more alignment to your viability statements and your going concern statements. So it's closer in and it makes it more relevant to investors and leadership teams in the here and now.
As we start to wrap up the conversation, obviously it's quite rare currently to see an IR professional successfully make that transition into board advisory. So I'm really keen to hear your advice for IR professionals who are starting to look ahead to the latter stages of their careers and think about that transition. What skills or experiences can IR professionals start to develop during their career that might position them? Or also, what sort of initial board roles or governance roles can you take on a sort of part-time pro bono basis to start to develop that skill set for the next phase of their careers?
There are a couple of elements for me, and I'm at the very beginning of developing my portfolio career, so I certainly don't have all of the answers. But having that strategic oversight, I think, is really valued with the board, and those conversations that you have with the board and the executive committee You know, how can you build on that as you are pursuing a board career? Networking is key, and networking is bread and butter for the investor relations professional. And so they'll be in a good place with regard to that, and you know, maintain those networks where you can in an authentic way, not a superficial way, I think is really important. And in terms of other experience, I've been on the board of a charity now for over 4 years. So that gives you fantastic experience of exactly the same sort of conversations that are happening, but it's in the volunteer sector. Also think about, when have you had those engagements with your audit and risk committee and maybe some of the other board committees? And are there any industry committees that you can get involved with? So lots of opportunities. It's really hard, though, I have to say, because investor relations is full on. And to try and carve out that time, it's very difficult. It's the same as, you know, treat it as your own sort of personal development. And as you try and carve out time for your personal development, include this in your personal development thinking.
I also, if you ever get the opportunity to observe a board meeting in a sort of non-participatory capacity, that's a phenomenal opportunity, because it really, I had the opportunity relatively early in my IR career to sit in on a section of a board meeting, which was not just related to IR. And it really shaped my understanding of actually what the volume of information across the business and the boards are dealing with. You know, there's hundreds of pages covering all sorts of aspects of the business. And it helps you understand what they're actually really focusing on and the types of conversation, types of challenge and debate that they're having. So if anyone does get that opportunity, absolutely take it. It's a really fantastic way to understand how boards actually function.
Yes, and see the interactions between them as well, and the personalities. And yeah, I completely agree with you on that one, Clara.
And looking ahead, we'll define the next generation of IR leaders.
I think greater adoption of systems thinking. So joining those dots across the business, which IR professionals, you know, the role lends itself to that. I think be cognizant of a broader set of stakeholders as we go forward. In this data-enabled world, media-enabled world, you need to be thinking, how might this message land with another group of stakeholders who might not be the intended target for that communication, but we all operate with access to infinite information. And if something is a promotion in store, but that doesn't connect with a conversation that you might have had with an investor, you know, you've got to think about all of these things. Think about your consumers, think about NGOs, think about people in the supply chain, your tier one and your tier two, as well as the investment analysts and that sort of thing. And building on that as well, I would also say, as we mentioned before, think about your financial and non-financial together, not in isolation. I think that's really important.
Really good advice there. The final question, is there anything you'd like to ask me?
In true IR style, I've got two questions, if I may, Clara. The first one, we talked about closing the gap to the long-term threats and the short-term sort of commercial planning and reporting cycles. When do you think we will get that momentum? And what's holding back this financial transition? How do we close that gap?
I think IR teams can be very reactive to the investors they're interacting with and the focus of those investors. And in a very event-driven world, there's a lot of short-term focus and a lot of short-term interest. Particularly, we're seeing a lot of companies going through activism defense scenarios where there's a very short-term sort of focus in terms of questions that you get from hedge funds and activist investors. And I think the role of IR is to always try and step back a little bit and think longer term alongside the reactive sort of responding to short-term focused questions. And that's a balance that you can strike when you're working on the reporting and the equity story messaging and the disclosure. That's a very important piece not to overlook or dismiss too much. So I think kind of the onus is on the IR team to be continuing to force longer term thinking onto what can be quite a short-term focused audience. And that should help sort of influence over time and get the right sort of balance with the messaging, even though you are having to be necessarily very reactive to the types of questions that you're getting. So I think that would be how I would kind of address that as an IR professional.
Okay, great. Thank you. My second question for you, Clara. Investors are great at spotting trends and looking at procurement data, share data, foreign exchange. When will we see that AI-led systemic approach applied more broadly to climate, nature, and energy and food resilience trends?
I think they're progressing faster than most IR teams realise, actually. Equatory conducted a survey, actually, of how the buy and sell side are using AI, and it's a significant portion of their research is AI-led now. And you might not sort of see that in terms of the questions and the limited interaction you have with them, but the first reader of your information is likely to be AI. And so how you're presenting information, the format in which you're presenting information, you should be sort of presenting that with the expectation that the first reader of that information is not going to be human. And actually AI will screen the data and then it will be human that interprets the data. So I think very much in terms of sort of disclosure, IR teams need to be really thinking that they're interacting with AI and AI will be using that data in perpetuity. So they need to be also understanding what AI is interpreting from the data and running it on different AI platforms themselves to see how that information is being interpreted, where the information is being pulled from. It's not necessarily going to be the company's own disclosure reports and website, but address through their sort of advisors, the information that's available about the company and get that factually correct and in the right format to allow AI to work as efficiently as possible with the data. So that's a sort of roundabout way of answering the question, but I think it's something that not all IR teams are really is front of mind right now, but actually there's the buy side and the sell side are heavily reliant on AI for research, and that's only going to increase going forwards.
That's fascinating. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me today, Sarah. I really appreciate your time and the insights that you've shared with our audience.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Clara. Thank you very much indeed for inviting me.
And thank you for joining Enquire, the Investor Relations podcast. Please look out for our next episode,